Welcome to the Site Visit Podcast, leadership and perspective from construction, with your host, James Faulkner.
Live from BuildX Vancouver 2024.
Stephanie, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So Stephanie Street from Synthesis Legal.
Correct.
Wow. So construction law?
That's right.
Yeah, quite an interesting path these days. Is the industry in general very litigious?
Well, I see the litigious side of it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
So that's everyone I speak to is litigious, but... Yeah.
I mean, we always say that everything in the United States is very litigious. Sure. It's always about suing everybody, et cetera. Yeah. Would you say that the appetite for litigation is a little, are people more, I would say, lenient in Canada than they are in the U.S. from a culture point of view? Like suing people?
Yeah, I don't know too much about... I don't know how to compare it to the United States because I haven't practiced there. But, I mean, certainly people get very invested in their jobs, invested in their projects. And so when things go wrong, it can be quite impactful for the business or the person.
Yeah.
And so when they come to us, it's usually with a problem that they're pretty worked up about.
Right, that makes sense. So let's just talk about your law practice, you know, what your background, what made you focus on getting into construction law?
Sure. I guess I started my legal career in Alberta.
Okay.
I did see that. Yeah, at a large international law firm. And
was it Denton's?
Denton's, yeah.
Yes, I got it.
You got it. Yeah, so I was there for a number of years. I articled there and then worked with closely with some senior partners there who were active in the construction area. And I just really took to it, and they seemed to like the work that I was doing. So we kind of just grew it organically that way.
Yeah.
And then when my husband and I are BC people, so when we were ready to come back to BC, there was an opportunity for me at Denton's
in Vancouver.
Getting
back to the water.
Back to the water, yeah. So I was able to join the construction and infrastructure team at Denton's in Vancouver.
Oh, it's cool. Nice.
Yeah, okay. So it's great, and working with amazing people there.
Right, and then you...
Yeah, and then, you know, practice changed again, and I wanted to work, you know, with some particular clients and closer with my clients, and so moved to a smaller practice.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. So is this your practice then?
This is my practice, yep. Okay. Synthesis Legal is my firm.
Right, did you founded it?
I did.
Okay, and do you have a number? How many lawyers do you have?
We have three lawyers and a senior paralegal and an assistant.
Oh, cool. Okay, so this is your baby.
This is my baby, yeah.
Nice, nice. And it's been, what year did you start?
In 2020.
2020, okay. So this is, it's still kind of fresh.
It's kind of fresh, yeah. 3 years, but going strong and
you enjoy like being running a business as well as doing your work?
I do. I like the business side of it. It's a different part of your brain than the legal stuff, which I also enjoy. But it's kind of nice to stretch those business muscles and be creative in that way as well.
It's interesting. One thing I always do like about lawyers in general, like one of our good friends is an intellectual property lawyer, McCarthy Tetrault in Toronto, mm-hmm. and he represents Pfizer, he's drugs and rock and roll because he's Nickelback's lawyer. I'm not going to mention his name, but so he does drugs and rock and roll.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But we also have great conversations because I think there's a different spatial reasoning that I think lawyers have. They like one of my favorite podcasts is Megyn Kelly. She's mm-hmm. ex-lawyer.
Yeah.
They just see and communicate in different ways. Probably see different layers.
Mm-hmm.
I will say there's a concentric circles of thinking, and some people just can't get out of the last ring.
Yeah.
You can probably see ring and ring and ring.
Like, well, I appreciate the compliment. Not everyone is so flattering to lawyers, but I do appreciate that.
Well, I actually have, shout out to Brock Smith at Whiteboard Law. I mean, he has, from the corporate law side of things, you know, helped me with corporate finance, helped me in a number of ways and been, you know, a partner with us at SiteMax. All the financings we've done, you know, we go out to lunch all the time, chat about stuff, and, you know, he's an integral part that I have a relationship with it just wouldn't have been the same.
That's the best. I think that's the most gratifying relationship, I think, for a lot of lawyers, too, at least for me, is when you can kind of get to know the client and go out for lunch or you know, kind of be the regular person that they call when something comes up. I think that's really gratifying.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay, so let's just talk about, you know, construction, you know, conflicts and all that kind of stuff. So what is typically, from your, if you were to look at, you know, your revenue over the past 4 years, what percentage is it? Is it general contractors and subtrades?
We do a lot of work for subcontractors and suppliers, and as well as some general contractors and some smaller owners projects. So the claims that usually come to us through the subcontractors are, unfortunately, usually they haven't been paid or there's a dispute about something on the site. And so we help them with liens if that's what they want to do and help them try and get paid.
Right.
Really.
Do often, offer school construction is all based on sequence and money. Time is money, obviously. So are there often claims where it's just project bloat and timing has wrecked things and it's screwed up everything and then there's conflicts of payment because of jobs can't get to be done because the schedule has changed? Is that
absolutely? Those are what we call delay claims, and those are those come up again and again as well, because as you say, everything's interrelated. So if somebody, you know, messes up their part of the work and does it poorly, it really affects the whole project.
So I had a Sean Gray was on yesterday, and he's a big data guy, and he's got a lot of statistics around. He was saying that 25% of revenue in construction is actually redos.
Wow.
Redos.
Wow.
God, I'm not that 25%, because he's also talking about emissions and all that, and how much that, you know, getting rid of materials that are wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Having to redo stuff. So those claims that. What are some of the best ways that you have found the customers clients clients that have gone through and had to set these claims? Let's say a subcontractor, you know, claiming a general contractor and claiming a loss there. What are some of the best ways to mitigate this? Like, you must be going through this stuff, and they present their case to you, and you're kind of like, yeah, if only that had happened. Like, what is that? What
yeah.
are those things?
Oh, no, it's usually come to me earlier. You know, I think sometimes people are afraid to rock the boat because there's personal relationships involved too, right?
There
you know,
is, it, yeah.
sometimes
there's a big trust thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of trust in construction in the industry, and it's small and everybody knows everybody. So I think a lot of the time people think, you know, well, if I just keep going and complete the project, then I'll get paid. But that's not necessarily the case. If you're finding that there's red flags all over the place earlier on, it would really be helpful to speak to someone like myself earlier on, because, you know, then you're at a much more, well, you have more leverage, frankly, because they want to get the job done. They probably don't want to switch suppliers.
Right.
So with
that's
some
a big headache,
with
yeah.
some skilled negotiation, you can usually get the money flowing.
So from an engagement point of view, you're on a sort of a hourly basis, so sometimes it can be maybe just a conversation with you that's, you know, under $1,000 can mitigate
crazy
stuff.
And because this is what we do, I mean, we don't practice in every area of the law, so we know construction law, and you know, you don't have to teach me about the standard form contracts. I mean, we already know them, right? So we can just jump into your SUPs usually and help you out and help you figure out what does it say, what are you obligated to do, what are your risks, and what, you know, what are some strategies.
Nice. Have you, we interviewed on the podcast, I think last year, a guy who founded Document Crunch. Have you heard of this?
A document what?
It's called Document Crunch.
Oh, no.
It's kind of interesting. It's, you upload all of your, when you get your contract, you upload it into their AI, and it gives you what things to look for.
Yeah. I've heard that there's more and more coming out like that. It's going to be really interesting.
It's going to be really good for you guys, I think.
It's going to be very interesting. I mean, we're kind of a, we're a nice, small, nimble firm that really adapts technology and looks into it. So we're following all of that very closely, actually. And there's really interesting stuff coming out with the generative AI. So I think it'll change law a lot.
It will. And I think what's, you know, you do hear a lot about, you know, this, you know, white collar jobs being replaced and all that kind of stuff by technology. And, you know, when I think about law, it really, I don't think that it will be replaced in that way. I think it's basically going to be tools, just like designers, for instance, right?
Yeah.
Designers now have tools to be able to use amazing things, to be able to give that stuff to their clients that's expedited.
I would agree, but I think there are some kind of the lower level, I guess, tasks that will be automated. And so I think there will be a chunk of work that will go the way of automation, but I don't think that will replace lawyers. I don't worry too much about the risk.
Well, there's a liability there too, right?
Sure, but there's also so much more that we do than just, you know, reading the contract. I mean, there's a whole strategy, and that really, I mean, comes down to experience and people and knowing the law and weaving it all together with the client's objectives. So that's really, I don't think that's something that computers are going to be able to do anytime soon.
Right, no, fair enough. And that's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah.
I was thinking that, you know, often there is the sidestepping some of the stuff that, you know, the sort of more of the mundane things like contract analysis and stuff like that. Not like full-on litigation, because that becomes creative, it becomes strategic, et cetera.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like meat and potatoes stuff.
There's kind of the minutiae that's critical. I mean, you have to do it, but I think a lot of that meat and potatoes stuff, as you say, is something that we'll be able to be more efficient with. And I think that can only be good for clients. I mean, there's a, you know, the old way of doing law is not the most efficient. So I think people have to get on board the efficiency train, or it's not going to be good for them.
Now, I also think of the you know, the hourly rate will probably be a lot higher, but will a lot be less work that is mundane.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, all legal professions are going to have to, you know, maintain their revenue and do all that kind of stuff. So I could see it where it's been run through AI by the client over and over and over, and they go, you vet this. It's like, well, the hourly rate to vet your AI is actually three times the amount, which it should be, because you're actually catching the stuff that...
Well, that's right. I mean, there's certain things that clients can do on their own, or they can do on their own with help of tools and AI and that sort of thing. And then, you know, if they need the lawyer to get it the last 20% of the way, that makes the most sense, right, in some cases.
So how do people, I guess... On the business development side, are you guys busy all the time, or are you always looking for business?
Well, we are accepting referrals. You know, most of our business actually comes from referrals from current clients and their contacts and our contacts. So we are accepting new business, but yeah, we keep busy all the time.
So where do you see, it's going to be interesting where robotics start to replace some things with humans, and isn't from a liability point of view, where is this all going to land, do you think?
Well, in a lot of courtrooms before before there's clarity. I think, you know, the technology is changing at a much different pace than the law is changing. We all know that the law changes very slowly. I think I
what is the lag, do you think?
Well, I don't know, but I heard some sort of a comparison to, you know, law is the only profession where if you practiced it 200 years ago, you could probably hop into a courtroom and do it a similar way today. There's not that much.
They still wear the wigs?
Oddly, no.
Okay, check.
Not here. But so there's not a lot that's changed. Or it's a slow change is the point, right? It's a really slow pace. Whereas the technology we've seen change, even in the last 10, 15 years, it's quite phenomenal. So
Yeah, I think, I mean, especially when you're I could see a lot of on prefabrication.
Yep.
Where a lot is already done and then shipped to site.
Right.
If there's a mistake in that.
You're just gonna have to have excellent quality control. I mean, you can let the robots do so much, but there's gotta be some way, whether it's, you know, robotic and then with a human touch, I don't know, but somebody's gonna be responsible for it. So you better make sure it's good quality, it's done right.
So what kind of other, I mean, do you dip your foot in HR claims as well or not?
Like for employment stuff? Yeah. We do a little bit
or
of employment stuff.
Do you just refer
stuff.
It
out? Yeah, we don't do a lot of employment stuff. Kind of the, we do advising of clients to kind of help them through with their employment matters. If they had a big dispute, I think we'd probably refer it out.
Right, so you were basically, you were hitting the ground running, and just as you got into sort of, a cadence of regular business and some velocity, COVID hit you guys.
Well, I think COVID happened first and then the firm, because COVID was early 2020. We started the firm in late 2020. So
right.
It was,
okay.
It was kind of an opportune time, really. Things were changing. People were having different needs and, reevaluating what they wanted to do. And so that was kind of an opportunity.
Were there any, obviously, client confidentiality, but were there any claims that were COVID related that you guys?
There was a lot of COVID related advising that had to happen because it was so new.
Like for policy?
Well, policy, but also, people were having problems, for instance, with not being able to get materials. And they'd say,
we can't because of COVID or whatever?
Well, can't because of COVID, or they couldn't get the people to be on the site. They're supposed to have 15 workers and they've got two because everybody's sick and, or not wanting to come for various reasons and then there's different vaccine, this and that. I mean, there's a lot of questions, I think, that we had to help clients with and they'd say, well, what do I have to do? What am I obligated to do? What do I need to do? What should I do, not do? So it was kind of a time of fear for some people. So it was nice to be able to help them through that. So I didn't see a COVID-related litigation per se, but it was more kind of navigating through it in the best way.
Do you find that within most claims that the client has put their foot in their mouth too early? And
yes.
They're the ones who, like, sealed their own fate?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because...
And they didn't call you at the right time?
Well, yeah, but the other thing is, we all know that data doesn't disappear anymore. It sticks around. So
yeah.
Sometimes if people get into a dispute, they'll find that their emails and texts and conversations from years ago come back to haunt them. Because it's all there, and if you get into a juicy piece of litigation, it's often producible. What you write... it's the truth's going to come out.
Totally. Yeah. Did you, besides emails and, just general documents, have mm-hmm. you guys, I mean, it's so funny because I think when you get into the talking to anything of mm-hmm. how the layman thinks about what a lawyer's job is, what it's going to be like at the courtroom, all they see is these TV shows and they wonder how real
that's
that
right.
is. But, you talk about people, having to get evidence, mm-hmm. et cetera. Have you guys had to be looking at video footage? Is there mm-hmm. any of this technology stuff that you've been analyzing things, saying, oh, we see kind of some things here? Have you been interfacing with that?
Yeah, we use all sorts of things. I mean, we kind of work with whatever the client uses on the site. So, for instance, if they are engaging in a lot of texting, we can, look at their texts. Sometimes there's software that people are using,
yeah,
right?
And like
so
SiteMax?
Yeah, that's right. So if that's something where they've been able to take pictures or videos or having site visit or meeting minutes, posted or saved and that sort of thing. So we kind of use whatever the client has kept. So we're aware of it all.
That's cool. So mm-hmm. have you been given access to log into SaaS platforms and see stuff, or do they typically provide it to you?
That has happened a few times. Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't go quite that way, but yeah, so we can get in there if they let us. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some tips that you have in terms of, I think you said one, you were saying, mm-hmm. call earlier,
yeah.
consult earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But where are most people getting in trouble?
Well, I think,
let's start with subs. Where are subs
sure.
mostly getting in trouble?
Subs are mostly getting in trouble. It seems like, I mean, I act for a lot of subs, right? So I see that they're often the unfortunate recipients of bad actors above them, right?
Okay.
So if there's a dispute between the owner and the general contractor, that can really affect the subs. And,
yeah.
and it's a rough thing because it's not always related to their work at all. It's something that's kind of out of their control.
Yeah.
But that does impact them.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Well, lots of things, I suppose. I think miscommunication is a large source of problems on site. So there's many times we'll hear, oh, well, he told me this, and so I did this. And it's like, okay, well, where's your change order? Oh, well, he just told me to do it. Okay, but your contract says you need a change order. So now we've got, two different situations going on there. So sometimes miscommunication can happen. So I think people have to be really careful to get things in writing most of the time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What about on the GC side?
on the GC side. I think maintaining a good relationship with the owner is in so much as they can. And, you know, I know some owners are harder to work with than others. But I think really just keeping open communication and addressing problems early. I think that's kind of a trend. I think a lot of lawyers will tell you is, you know, don't let it balloon. Don't let it be a $4 million claim at the end of the project. Like, talk about it earlier, get some legal advice, get the lawyers in the room and the project managers and whoever's making decisions over there and try and hash something out.
How often do interactions with cities, permitting, all that kind of stuff make its way into these problems?
I haven't seen a lot of permitting issues. I know there are some firms that have dealt with those sorts of things. I think that'd be more on the owner end.
Yeah.
But that can come up for sure. And, you know, certainly if something goes wrong, cities and municipalities are brought into it sometimes.
And have you dealt with any safety claims, the things we've gone wrong on?
Okay. Yep.
So what's typically, where's the trend there? Where are most people dropping the ball?
I don't know if there's a particular trend for that I could really identify. I think it kind of depends on the site. I mean, I think making sure you have a good solution for where your water is going and how you're managing, you know, the site during excavation, that's pretty critical. I mean, it's a time where things can go wrong.
Yeah, we did see that footage on the news of that wall that slid down.
That's right.
Oh, my God. As a lawyer, you're looking at that going, okay.
Oh, I think my jaw dropped to the floor when I saw that on the news. That was just terrifying, and it's just so lucky that no one was injured, from my knowledge.
Yeah, no, totally. Mm-hmm. So just lastly, I was, I just wanted to ask, you know, how is the consciousness around projects because of technology, are people paying more attention, less attention, expecting technology to kind of do work for them, and it's getting missed in the databases, and humans are not paying as much attention now? Is it like that, or do you think it's going the other way?
I don't know. I think people are aware that it's here to stay, and I think I see more and more clients adopting new technologies and policies and things that they're going to follow. I think there's a certain changing of the guard as well, with baby boomers starting to retire and the younger generation kind of coming up and taking over companies that maybe were their family's companies and that sort of thing. So I think there's an energy there around technology and an openness to adapt to it.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. So if you were to just give one statement of advice other than call us early, because you already used that one. Is there anything else you can say to people that says, look, just save yourself and blah, blah, blah? What would that be?
Yeah, I suppose don't think that court's the best and only solution. There's a lot of ways that we can get you to your end point. And so I think that's an interesting conversation. You know, sometimes people will call and say, you know, this happened, we need to go to court. It's like, slow down. There's a few things we can do before you have to go that route.
Yeah.
So I think people just need to keep an open mind.
Even the court wants mediation first.
Yeah, a
so
lot of
the time.
So I don't
want to waste the court's time.
They encourage it, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot can be worked out there, especially when it gets down to that. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, like, upon mediation, I was taken to court once as a designer. When my brand days, this crazy person said I copied their name and logo. And I looked at it and I thought, okay. As a designer, I'm like, they're not even close.
Yeah.
Like, this was crazy town.
Yeah.
Anyway, it went to mediation first. Mm-hmm. And the mediator is supposed to be Switzerland. They're not supposed to either way.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually said to the other party, or to the plaintiff, all of that. Mm-hmm. Are you sure you want to go forward with this? I can't take a side here, but I think it's hard to define a likeness here.
Yeah, for sure.
That's very rare, though, isn't it?
Mediators have to be neutral. I'm actually a certified mediator by the Law Society. Mediators they do have to be neutral, but there's what's called the evaluative approach. Sometimes people will choose a mediator because they have a particular expertise. So, for instance, I've done a lot of construction. People might choose me for a construction dispute because I know the terms, I know the contracts, that sort of thing. So sometimes people are looking to the mediator for a little bit of tough love, or kind of, it's not advice because it can't be advice. You have to get a lawyer to give you independent advice, but an observation, you know, they'll kind of look to the mediator who's experienced in that industry for observations about their thoughts on some of it and see if that can help them determine, you know, what they want to do. But sure, the mediator has to stay neutral though.
Yeah, got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Stephanie. Well, this was awesome.
Thank you so much. Good to
know you. You're in the podcast bubble. I'm looking at your business card here, so I'm just going to look at this. This is syntheslegal.com. That's how people can get hold of you.
That's right, yep.
And nice business card, by the way.
Thank you. Attention to detail. Thank you.
Very nice. Jukebox, maybe? Jukebox did these?
No. Moo.
Moo. Oh, Moo cards. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. You get this. Yeah. It's very nice.
Thank
nice
you.
Texture.
Okay. Great. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're welcome.
Well, that does it for another episode of The Site Visit. Thank you for listening. Be sure to stay connected with us by following our social accounts on Instagram and YouTube. You can also sign up for our monthly newsletter at sitemaxsystems.com/thesitevisit, where you'll get industry insights, pro tips, and everything you need to know about The Site Visit podcast and Sitemax, the job site and construction management tool of choice for thousands of contractors in North America and beyond. Sitemax is also the engine that powers this podcast. All right, let's get back to building.